Hey, welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepwe, also known as Aka. So cool, right? Anyway, today's guest is a special one. You know how I'm always saying one of my favorite things to do is to kind of have my friends on the podcast. And I really am excited about this one because the tea, the laughter, and everything in between will shock you.
I'm already laughing.
She's amazing. She is in education. She does a lot of stuff. I feel like I'm not the best person to describe people, but trust me, you will enjoy this conversation. Have I ever disappointed you with my friends? I doubt it. Very cool people, right? With that being said, welcome my friend, Kabwe Yamba Yamba. Hi, Kabwe.
Hi, Aka. I'm super excited to be here. Finally. I feel like I'm ready.
You know, you can dance that song by Pastor Nat. Finally. 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 The Lord has done
it. I can actually even see you do it. No, I feel so honored. Like, finally, I've reached celebrity status. Who am I?
Hey, tell us.
Bless to be featured us on this beautiful 101 podcast.
You're already a celebrity. What do you mean? I was with you at an event 2 weeks ago, and everybody was like, Cowboy, Cowboy. I was just like, hey, that's my friend.
No, it was just in the room, if I should say. But I'll take that as like a blessing in advance. I'll take it.
No, but you are doing amazing stuff. And I think that I know what you do, but I don't think I have seen you in your element. Like, I've seen you in your element in different systems we've been or communities we've been, but it was so good to see you in your element when it had to do with Genius, because I've never attended a Genius workshop or anything. So just listening to you speak about education, bruh, like, I was taking pictures of you. I think people are so intimidated. Like, that's my friend. I know that girl.
And I was trying so hard not to look at you because I felt like I was going to crack up mid the panel discussion.
So how does it feel to be where you are right now? Like, where are you? I feel like you have had a lot of transitioning the last 2 years or a year.
Yeah.
So, like, where are you right now and how are you feeling about everything?
Wow, Aka. First, before I even answer your where are you question, I just want to say that you're doing amazing work with your podcast. And I think I told you this before when we talked about it. Like, I love how raw and how, like, authentic your podcast is. I love how it's just real, you know, because I feel like the podcast industry, it's a lot of, like, you know, doing things for public interest, just talking about things that everyone is talking about, so many views and opinions that don't matter. So I actually enjoy the fact that you bring, like, real people with real stories and you allow them to just be their unfiltered self. So for me, being here is just such an honor because, yeah, to be able to just sit in a place with you who's also doing amazing things and just, you know, not panic that what will she ask me? I'm panicking a bit, but, like, my point is just having, seeing you grow and even just the consistency of the podcast, the amazing quality of people you've brought on this podcast, the gems that are dropped, I feel like only come from a place of authenticity. And for that, honestly, friend, I commend you and I'm so proud of you. Anyway, I don't want to be here to do too many love letters.
I received my letter.
I'll toast you again in your DM soon. But your question was, where am I now? So you're right to actually say that I've been through a lot of transitions. I wouldn't say 2 years. I feel like I've been transitioning for like 5 years now. And that's only because, like you said, when you started, and something common I've experienced is, what do I actually do? And I do so much. And for the longest time in my life, I've been a multi-potentialite. So that means that at any given point, even if you ask me right now what I'm doing at least three different things, very different things, but obviously merge at some point. And living in a world where, like, there's this obsession with, like, branding and packaging and how you look and how you show up, it took me a while to really find my feet and just show up as that person. So depending on where you find me, I'd be a different person. But I had a really hard time reconciling those different streams of my influence together. So generally now I say that I'm a change maker, if we're to put it boldly. I'm a change maker and I'm passionate about education, which is like my topmost priority. I also do a lot of work in development communication. So that's around, I'm just ensuring that programming is aligned with like global development agendas and just a lot of comms and also social innovation. So that's most of the work I do. I'm also Christian. I co-run a community with one of my very good friends, Belia, and we have a Christian community called Bloomer. So already up, I've said five things. I hope you're keeping up. But the point is just that I do so many things. I've been doing so many things. And for a while, I felt like I had to explain myself into one thing. And now I'm making peace with the fact that I don't have to be one thing. I don't have to be one thing. I don't have to choose one thing. I don't have to show up as one thing. I can be whoever I want to be. And it's such a beautiful time in the world to be actually, to actually embrace dynamism. And that's where I'm at currently. So currently, my vision is getting clearer. I'm putting myself out there. I'm speaking more about my story, writing more about my journey, showing up in spaces, and just speaking more about my multi-influential lifestyle and the different places I'm called to. So the transition is still happening because I'm still solidifying like my vision, but I will say this, I'm clearer, I'm bolder, I'm better, and I'm finally accepting that I'm many things and more, and it's okay to be that person. Yeah.
That's very broad, and I really like it, because sometimes if anyone would meet someone like you, they would always think that Kavwe knew it from the beginning. You know what I mean? Like she already knew what her purpose was. Mm-hmm. She figured it out. I should also just do that. Like I should also just work on one thing, try to kind of follow that path. And this is why that we have the podcast. It's like showing people that, hey, really, like there's so many dimensions to your life, and that so many experiences that will shape you differently. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. It's very much okay. You really don't have to stick to one thing for a long time.
Yeah.
But you should sometimes, but you get what I mean.
Yes. I know.
What aspect of your life really deepened your understanding to yourself and what you are doing and where you currently are, as Kavwe?
That's such a deep question, Aka. Am I the only one asking deep questions? Oh, but anyway, you ask everyone deep questions.
I also anyways, just know you.
yes. I will start by saying, for me, I'll just clarify, you know, like purpose is usually seen as, you know, this big thing you have to arrive at. You know what I mean? Like, it's always painted as this like really huge thing that you probably arrive at. But one of the like things that have set me free in my journey to becoming who I am is that purpose is not a destination necessarily. Purpose is just an accumulation of who you are and everything you could be. So what do I mean? Me sitting right here with you, Aka, and recording this podcast because I love to speak about my journey is purpose. Me going to my parents' house and dropping off lunch there because I like to be hospitable is purpose. Me showing up at my church and serving every Sunday is purpose. Me just hanging out with my little cousins or my nieces is purpose. And it's not always tied to like, oh, your career and you're this person in the industry and things like that. So that's one. But what really deepened where I am today for me is my journey in faith. Being Christian, which I anchor on, I've taken the past 3 years really doing a lot of work in terms of understanding who I am at my core, because once I understand who I am at my core, then everything else can flow out of there. So even in my different expressions in like development communication, in education, in social innovation, in Christian communities and ministry, all come to the Kavwe who is at my core. And those are just different expressions of who I am at my core. And how that came about was just my journey with God, really. Just sitting with him, because I believe that we were created by God, and Like, if I'm confused about something, I should go back to the manufacturer and ask him, what are we doing and how are we doing that? And I think in the last years, honestly, I've always been Christian and I've grown up Christian. But in the last years, I've done some really intentional work in terms of deepening who, understanding who Kabwe is before the platforms, before I even step out doing education, running Genius and all these other things. Who am I at my core? And I think the more I've resolved my identity at my core, the more I have been able to show up better and to speak more about this multi-influential life I speak of. So to sum it up, and I'm glad to the podcast because I talk a lot, it's just for me, it's really taking the journey in faith and really finding myself in God and that being expressed outwardly into all these different things. Yeah.
I like that you keep bringing back to who am I to my core. And I think that that's like conversations people don't have with themselves and the people around them. Just kind of understand what role they are playing and what role other people are playing and how certain things manifest in their life. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely kind of, it hits home because there are certain things you experience to teach you who you are to your core. Yes. So everything is a lesson. Everything is happening for a reason to kind of just give you a better understanding. It's always that thing where if you don't learn that lesson, God will teach you in a different way, but it will keep repeating until you learn that
until lesson. You graduate that class. Yeah.
That class. So if you are not graduating that class, it means you haven't learned that specific lesson. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe this probably brings back to our relationship and where we met and how much impact that has done for us. So you and I met under Bloomers. So Belia is a mutual friend. I worked with you and Belia as an assistant for over 2 years. Wow.
That was a long time, girl.
I feel like a big girl.
You are.
I know, makes me want to cry. Ooh. And let's talk about that experience, because one thing I'll always give it to Belia. Belia is an amazing teacher and very patient. I always tell her that if there's one thing you've been really good at in this season for me and everybody around you is how intentional you are when you're teaching and empowering somebody with learning about yourself. And when it comes to the two of us, I think our relationship was more based on, we got to get this done. We have this happening and we have that happening. But what that taught me at my core and who I was is that I like service. I like servicing people. I really do like to service people. And even if it's uncomfortable, I like to service people and it look differently in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I'll also evolve from it as time goes on. I think it's also made me feel bad maybe when I had to stop with Bloomers, because I'm like, I really would like to be doing this for like 5 more years.
Yes. But
like in that particular season, that's what I needed to learn. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's why it hits home when you talk about core, because I look at every journey that I have been through and everything I have done and where I am right now. I always say this, when you know you need to know someone to get something done. Like Kabwe was my someone, one of my biggest gigs last year. I'm like, I just needed Kabwe to do that and that.
Just do that and that.
We won't say what the that and that was.
Family.
So when we talk about how, if we talk about how someone would learn or how someone can start being intentional to learn who they are and to understand what the core existence should be, because you could know what your core is, but the expressions will always be different in different seasons. It would always evolve. Mm-hmm. Like, what are some of the things you'd speak for or speak to a person to just kind of start learning about themselves?
Yeah. While you were speaking about me and you's experiences, I literally had a moment just now because one of the things me and you used to organize, because with the Bloomers community, for context, right, it's a Christian community, and it was a lot of service. And I remember there was a time, remember we had to organize the vision day? And you remember, yeah. I think there was no power, and then me and you literally had to, like, put up a brazier so that people could have hot water. And I remember, like, everyone, and it was raining. Do you remember that? And everyone was like,
I do. Wasn't it failing?
Yes. Everyone was in the living room, like, in worship and really, you know, pouring out. And then me and you were, like, outside with this brazier. And then between the two of us and our nails and whatever was going on, we're failing to have this brazier go
to yasha them baula.
Yes, eventually we yashed them baula and everyone had like hot water. And I think by the time we're done, I think we're going there for closing remarks.
Yeah.
And I remember how that day, me and you, I don't know if you remember, we had a conversation about how, like, you know, sometimes when you're in the background, right, you might feel like you've been robbed of experiences.
Yeah.
But then just from that day, I remember how intentional God was. That's because we had such deep conversations outside trying to kosher them, Baola. You told me about, like, Tonse. And that's the day I actually really talked to you. Like, we didn't talk about, like, oh, Aka, do this. Like, we really talked about stuff. And I remember leaving that experience feeling like, oh, my God. Like, I actually talked to Aka for, like, 2 hours. And we served everyone and everyone was happy. And in the end, even though we weren't, like, really part of the, you know, like, the environment, and that's been me and you, I think, in Bloomers, right? Like, where we're in the background, we're chasing things.
We're getting things done.
You are getting things done, and then people show up, and they have this experience. Then you and I are just doing, like, damage control and that. But I think for me in that, just as a side note, God really taught me how, even if I'm not always part of it, there was a bond me and you created, and there's a way we saw God move. Because sometimes, remember, we'll do like, oh, we're doing this picnic. And remember the budget, we'll be like, where's the money coming from? You know, like, and
better always says, have faith.
Yes, like, have faith. And I think it was in those things where we're not really part of, like, the thing. But, like, in the way me and you would work, would get things done with such a large vision, and they would come to pass, right? Because God would prove himself loyal. And I feel like that's something I really treasure about both me and you's journey, because I feel like we grew in faith. Because you remember at first, we're like, okay, so how will this happen?
Yeah.
And at that time, Bloomers had really little people. You remember, like,
people
come in the beginning, would be like, oh, great. Then the numbers started to grow, right? Like, oh, now we're having 30 people and 50. And me and you are like, hey, guys, it's getting serious. But my point just with that side chat was, I really enjoyed that part of you, like, learning service, because I think that's where me and you sort of merge. I'm serving people. And I really loved how God taught us simultaneously about faith, friendship, and really about community. Because with Belly as well, like, the three of us really always thought about the women, the experience they would have, and it was so beautiful, and it's still beautiful even if you're not part of it, to see it grow, right? Because you also played a really huge part in its foundation. So that's a side chat. But to your actual question about what things would I speak to for people to know themselves, I think for me, at the very basis, because I'm Christian, I would say go back to God. But I feel like that also sounds very broad. But I'll start with very, like, universal, or, like, things that can be applied across the board, across religions. Self-awareness is such a huge thing, guys. Like, take a personality test. Take a strength test. Get feedback from people. Think about things like, if all my friends sat in a room, what would they say about me? Like, if everyone sat in a room, all of Akka's friends sat in a room, what would they say about Akka? What would be the merging points about Akka? Take, like, a Johari Windows test. Find time and sit with yourself and ask yourself things like, who do I want to be? What makes me happy? What moves me? What makes me sad? The more you ask those questions about who you are and those features about yourself, it really starts to reveal your core, right? I'll give you an example of myself. Something that I would shoot myself in the leg for many years till most recently was, guys, when I take that personality test, I'm 96% feelings. Like, what? Like, I'm only 4% logic. I'm a very passionate, emotional person. But then, because for years, I wasn't so self-aware and didn't see that as my strength, I tried to show up as this logical, boxed-up person, right? And I'd shoot myself in the leg because I'd work so hard to be this logical person. So then what does that do to me? It makes me move away from what my core is. So at my core, I'm a problem solver. At my core, I'm an encourager. At my core, in any given space, at any given time, I bring clarity to people. I bring encouragement. I bring wisdom and I bring knowledge. But for me to confidently say this today, I had to go back and backtrack and ask myself things like, when I'm around people, what do most people say after they have a conversation with me? What are the words they say? I had to write those words down. What are the things people say, both negative and positive, about me when I'm around them? What places make me happy? What things make me happy? What things make me sad? What things make me anxious? What's my personality type? What really, like, if I say what's the best day of my life, what does it speak to? What happened on that day? The more you ask yourself these questions, like why, what, how, the more you actually start to find that there is always an intersection in these experiences you have. So for me, I'll just start by saying self-awareness is such a big tool. I know there's a couple of books and all that stuff around, but I'll just say take time with yourself. Like, take your strengths test. What are your strengths? How do you show up in a room? What's your leadership style? For me, I've taken a lot of those over the years. I've had to sit myself with conversations. But then that's for a universal approach to it. But for me, being Christian, I've really also had to sit with God and just resolve that. At my core, I'm a child of God. I'm a daughter of God. And that's what I am. Like, the highest thing I'll ever be in life is a daughter of God. And knowing that I'm a daughter of God also anchors a lot of how I show up. So because I'm Christian, I want people to see me and actually feel like they've met a Christian. I don't want people to see me and be like, is she even Christian, that one? So a lot of that also is anchored on what I believe in my faith. But yeah, if we're looking at it universally for everyone listening to this, do a lot of self-awareness. Ask yourself a lot of questions. Ask your friends, ask your family. And I know that sometimes some of us have critics to our family, but those are the best people to actually get responses from. Ask about your childhood. What things in your childhood can you remember? What were the core memories that you have? The more you actually go back, the more you ask, the more you, like, you know, prude into these things, the more you actually start to see a picture of yourself. So yeah, that's what I would say really to pointing at how you know who your core is.
Like, I think if there's one thing we talk about a lot on this podcast is taking a personality test. Yes. And also just learning more about yourself. I think my conversations with people, when I also advise people, it's always anchored on those. Like, yeah. Like you said, if you talk about God and everything, that also sounds broad. But the little tests, taking a personality test, I always say to people that when you take a personality test, it will show you different angles of how things will be. Your default roles, how you react in a relationship, at work, like everything in the friendship circle, in a business.
Yes.
Like, what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses? Mm-hmm. How do you mash up things for each to work? And honestly, I think that my personality test told me I wouldn't be such a great business person. I think so. Like, I'm a creative. But I was like, well, I wanted to become a business person. And I need to work on this and that and that. So, again, like, the personality tests are never permanent. But it just means the self-awareness to say, okay, great. This is who I am.
Yes, and just to add to what you've just said about personality tests, they're not truth, right? And also just said that personality tests are scientific. So it's based on probability and cause, right? So according to what you answer, it takes you because of the answers that you've gotten to a certain type of personality. So even when you go through those personality tests, like you've said, they give you like a broader understanding of who you are and just bring some sort of self-awareness. But also to say that there are also things about your personality that you can change. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I've learned that because I'm a person who feels a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I've had to learn certain skills because I'm such a feeler. You know what I mean? And there are things that there are traits I don't have now that I need to get because of where I want to go. And there are also traits that I have in my personality that I need to, you know, like reduce a bit because of where I need to go. So I think it's really good that you brought up that point, because we're not saying like, oh, now that you know that you are a what, just be that person, follow through, and everything it says about you is correct. That's just an opening into who you could become. But also it's up to you to see what are the gaps. Where are you going? What's your vision for yourself? Where do you see yourself? And if I have this personality, how do I leverage my strengths, right? How do I leverage my weaknesses? How do I fill in the gaps? How do I become better? And then you work around that. So I really love that you brought that out, because sometimes people might say, it's like the excuse people use about, oh, I'm Sagittarius, so I mean what? Mm-hmm. I'm Virgo, so I'm snappy. Like, no, just be better, be accountable. We're not about to deal with your bad attitude because you're Scorpio. Like, that's not our business. Like, because you are a star sign, we are all suffering. No, like, just do your part. Yeah.
And also, when it comes to signs and everything. So let's say what my name means. Let's say, what does Akakandelo mean, right? Yeah. They always say someone who's very obsessive. Like in our language, right? When you translate it to English, it's someone that's very particular. When I was younger, I didn't like that, because when you think of obsessive, you think about the negative of it. But when being particular about something is a good trait, it just depends where that trait is in. Yes. Like, it's very good I'm particular in certain things. It might not be good that I'm particular in certain areas that I'm not supposed to be particular in. It's understanding that things are very balanced. Like, I like when someone cynic talks about this. Things are balanced. So when you know you're good and you're bad, I think it's very easy for you to kind of navigate life and also be accountable.
And also heal.
Yes. And also, it will give you a chance for certain people not to use certain things against you. And Tavo attests to this. I might be very overconfident. Or maybe I'm a type of person that if I walk into a space, you take me as I am. Right?
Yes.
And I find myself in situations where supposedly people will throw jokes that used to offend me, like, oh, you are crazy, oh, you're shiny, oh, da 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 da. Now I don't get offended, because if that's what you think, that's okay. But because I know maybe certain traits of mine would maybe bring that out, or maybe would make you think I am that person, doesn't mean I am that person. So when you kind of do a personality test and you start kind of understanding yourself to your core, there are certain comments that initially would trigger you.
Yes.
Stop. Because you're like, oh, you are that. You don't even need to defend yourself. Mm-mm. You just let that person's comment pass for what it is, a comment, and you move on. And so it's such a good thing.
And you also just make, just to say, like, even with the personality test, right, and all these self-awareness things we're talking about, like, for example, like you said, like, being overconfident. A lot of people like to, my mentor says, strong shame, right?
Yeah.
Like, for people who are very overconfident or are always answering questions, or are the loud ones, or are the ones, you know, for a long time, especially when growing up, like, we're the ones who would get the comments for, ah, you talk too much. You know, like, yeah, do this, yeah, do that. And there's like, you feel like sometimes, okay, maybe let me tone down a bit, right? Maybe if I tone down and do this and do that. But then you start to realize that the more you cut away things about you that speak to your signature, the more you become like everybody else, right?
Yeah.
And usually people who speak to things like, oh, yeah, this and yeah, that, it's usually just their worldview, because they see people like that a certain way. And I feel like when, like I say, when you start to resolve your identity and who you are and what your purpose on earth is and what you've been called to, really and truly, some things start to fall off. Like, for me personally, I remember something that used to irritate me at a point was, say, when I was younger, I was like, oh, you're such a church girl. You know, like, you're always a church girl. Yeah. Like, your faith. And you know, when I got older, especially in uni, I used to tone that down. Like, I don't want people to know this about me. You know what I mean? I want to be like a cookie. Yeah. people shouldn't know. But the older I got, I realized that faith is actually a value for me. So even on this conversation or podcast where it's just a generic topic, right? I will boldly speak about my faith, not because I'm trying to make you feel somehow, no. But it's because like it's such a, you know, like it's such a part of me that I can't not speak about it because it's who I am. And I've had to be confident and be okay with being that person. And so when people, like even now, maybe someone is listening to this and they're doing a camera sneak, like these people, like it doesn't bother me, right? Because like being Christian for me is part of my identity. And so even now, people pass those comments, like, I can't do a church, so you won't do this, you won't do that. I'm just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that, right? So like it like you're saying, it really helps you just solidify what your values are and to stand for them. And you just stop feeling a certain way. And even on the things that are actually bad, you can work on them, right? But like you stop letting people dictate who you could be.
True. And I think just to kind of add on to that, where are the shame associated when we're growing up? I think for me it was how everybody said, you are so loud. Ish, like ever. I am such a hyper person. Like, if you know me.
I actually hear you before I see you.
Like, if you know me, and if we're friends, you'd be like, that's Aka. Like, on any other day, I'm just very chilled, yeah. I'm chilling. Then you see me with my friend. I think if someone saw us 2 weeks ago, they were like, did you guys just meet here or your friend?
Yes. Because we made so much noise.
We met, yeah, I know, like the room 10, they were like, okay, these are actually friends. So I think for me, it was that. I think I really struggled with that. And maybe after high school to uni, like for 4 or 5 years, I turned it down. And it was so depressing. I wasn't my usual hyper self. I was very reserved. And the other thing people don't realize that the comments mostly also come from the people closest to you.
Yes.
You hear stuff like, okay, ish. Ah, or it's like, oh, you like attention. You like this.
Yes.
So I think for me, that's one thing I've got to struggle with. Even now, I'm very aware and cautious. If you ever think I'm not the most aware person, is do I really want to be loud here?
No.
Like, do I want to be in this space right now? So it's a lot of questions for me to just express myself and be as loud as I am. Yeah. It's such a thing. So, yeah. And honestly, these are things a lot of teens go through and then you start unlearning them in your 20s. It's either you become self-aware in your 20s enough to kind of understand that you're okay the way you are or not. Yeah. So it's a whole thing. But, yeah, self-awareness is just the core to everything.
It really saves you a lot, honestly speaking. Like, it saves so much because, like, for you, you know how you're saying for you what you struggled with was being loud. For me, it was how emotional I was. Like, I was quote-unquote a cry baby, right? Like, for me, I cry easily. Like, my tears live at my door. And I know people who've met me, like, recently in my 20s wouldn't agree. Because I tried to change that so much. So if you meet me first time the past 5 years, I think you'd think I'm very, like, closed up and I'm a bit, like, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But, like, people who grew up with me know this about me. Like, me crying. Hey! Just give me an opportunity to cry, I will cry. Like, the tears would leave at the door of my eyes. And for a long time out here, like, you're such a cry baby. You're so emotional. You get so touched easily. Even in high school, it was the same thing. Like, so I remember this day vividly. I think it was in 11th grade. I just told myself that if I continue like this, I won't manage. Like, I will not manage in this world. Like, this thing for air, you cry, you what? And I just switched it off. Like, I literally just stopped being, like, this emotional person. And like you're saying, I just became very miserable. I found myself in places I shouldn't have found myself with people who I didn't. Because now, you know, you're attracting people who are now fitting the person you've become. So now that emotional, loving, empathetic person has died because you think that being now this, and I became mean, right? I became so mean. I became judgmental. I became so cold. I was those people, like, if I meet you for the first time, I'll literally predict what kind of person you'd be and how you'd, you know, do me dirty. Like, I just had all these walls up because I was trying to protect myself. And I tell people this a lot, like, some of us, you guys, if you break our hearts, we'll die. Like, me, you guys, I can't manage. Like, I feel like a generator is doing my heart, so I can't manage. But then just looking back now, right, to now healing and unlearning those things, I found that the more I've gone back to that person, the Kawe who's empathetic, who's loving, who cherishes moments, who's so passionate, the more my gifts and talents have grown. Because that's where they flow from, right? Because if I want to be an encourager, if I want to build community for young women, I have to be vulnerable, you know? I have to speak from my heart. I have to allow people in. If I say I want to be a mother when I grow up, I have to know those things like sacrifice, right? To be able to give love purely. And the more I've healed and sort of like uncovered these skills from all the things people tell me about how you're such a what and this and that, the more I've returned to that person, I feel like the more happy I've become, the more confident I've become in myself. And I just show up so differently. It's evident. Like, I'm just me. And when people are like, oh, you're crying because of the movie, I'm like, yeah, I cry easily. And I'm fine with that. It's okay. So I really agree with what you're saying.
And also, funny thing as well is the other thing, just like you and I kind of have the same personality, by the way. I think we actually probably have the same personality, or 75%. I'm also very...
Okay, I'm just not as bored as you. I always tell you this. Like,
that's why you need a friend like me.
Bored. Me, I feel like I filter some my life. Aka, I even tell like, Aka, if I want to just win something, let me just carry Aka. Aka, go and say everything we need to say. For me, I feel like I'm a bit more filtered. But yes, we're very similar in terms of energy and
yeah, that energy stuff. And everything. So for me, I'm a very emotional person. Mm. And growing up in a very extended family, mm-hmm. and also being like the youngest for a long time, mm-hmm. being bullied at home at school, mm-hmm. being emotional, something that they will use against you. Exactly. And I realized that when I was in my teens, I would go to this office and cry about how people mm-hmm. hated me. Like, mm-hmm. like cry about how I think I'm going to fail. And I think one of my favorite people is this couple. The wife is late now. I used to call them my parents at school because I would just go in the office. They knew that I was miserable because I have to, when you're a teenager and you're being bullied and everything and you want to fit in, you kind of have to kind of have like the tough girl look. Like you're a baby, but you're a tough girl.
You have to show up tough.
Anything will be used against you. Do you people?
Yes. I always say
high school is the ghettoest place.
No, it is.
Any small,
you know, people are still traumatized and show up differently because of their high school trauma.
Me? Okay, not me. Like, I'm aware of it and I've kind of moved on from it. I have boundaries towards it. But that experience is when I realized that in my 20s, like, from 15 to, like, last year, 2023, after my US trip and the new experience and learning about all these tools, I wouldn't cry as much. I wouldn't cry as much. I wouldn't tell people how I feel. Like, I am such a few person where if I love somebody, I tell them I love them. Yes. I think, you know, it's like I'm leaving a place. I'm like, okay, love you. Like, literally.
Me and you actually do that. I feel people look at us all the time. I'm like, I love you. Bye.
Like, I will say that so many times. Like, what if it's the last time I'm seeing you and I didn't tell you I love you and all that and all that and all that. But my point is, I once dated somebody and it took him 3 years to realize I'm such a girl and such a baby. Like, now I'm in that spirit where I'm really such a girl and I remind people all the time.
I'm just a girl.
Like, yes, I can. Yes, I do big stuff. Yes, I'm all this and that, but I'm very emotional. I get hurt easily. Yes, sometimes my default is to pretend I'm not. So it's all that where you now get to start realizing I'm this person and I want to show up as this person. I don't want to show up as the world created me or how I created myself because of my circumstances at that point. So it's very interesting, to be honest, to just listen to you speak and be like, girl, me too.
Yes. And you know, also the flip side of that coin, I think, is Because, you know, sometimes we just talk about, like, what was inflicted on us, right? Because then you you start showing up differently. But then because of that, you also start to bleed on other people. You know what I mean? Because now, yes, like, you are withholding the thing you should be giving to the world. So now I'm no longer empathetic. I'm no longer loving. I'm no longer crying or sharing my emotions. So now I'm a mean girl, right?
Yeah.
I just say things unfiltered and hide behind the "I'm just being honest" chat. Even when people want to show me love, I can't take it because I'm just scared that if we go very far, I'll really love you. Yes, like I'll and you know, for me, those are things that would scare me. Like if I have a new friend and they're just acting too nice, I'm like, what's the end goal here? Like, I'm going to cry.
That's so me.
Like I'm going to cry. And I think for me, in the past few years doing the work and healing, I found that and I had to repent of it, right? And even apologize to some people because I realized that, oh my God, because of how I was moving mad.
Yeah.
There were people who genuinely cared. There were people who genuinely loved me. But then because I had changed and I didn't have the capacity to love properly, I bled on these people. And I feel like sometimes we talk about what, like, you know, that experience does to you. But then we also have to take accountability of how you now start showing up with other people and how many people you have to hurt. Like, you've hurt along the way. Because, you know, with moving like that, you leave a lot of dead bodies in your path. Like, you just leave dead bodies all over the place because of this person you've become. And for me now, I've become just more intentional about, like, just, you know, showing love, being me, being myself. And also, even for the past things, I've had to resolve and just apologize to certain people. Like, you know, just, you know, doing the work, because that also puts you in a position where how much you move mad. Like, when you start thinking, like, what was that for?
But and then you also kind of think of how you and you always think you're the victim.
Yes.
You always think they did me bad. Mm. Bruh. You play the role. Like, you also have done bad. And like you said, I think I've also really I dated somebody. They dated me during that period and afterwards.
Yeah.
And they said, like you said, you're really moving mad. And this girl you are now is very different from the one I knew and experienced. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I kind of want to talk about this a little bit is that I told somebody to say, I really like this person, but they keep taking me back to the person I'm no longer. It's like, even for the other people, it's so hard for them to move past you, who you were, and to see you for who you've become now.
Yeah.
So it's really just a flip coin and everything. And as you ask for forgiveness from others, you kind of have to forgive yourself so that as you show up and as you be in the world, like, yes, I did move bad. But I did move mad. But as Kawe now, I am not that person.
Yes, I agree with you, Ak, and I think also the bigger part in that is, and I think it's, I don't say it's a Zambian thing, but what I've noticed as well is that in the context that we've grown up in and we've been set up, change and evolution is not a thing, right? Like, people, you have people really still relating to you to who Akka was in grade 7. They're bringing the jokes about who you were in grade 7 to you as like a 20-year-old now. And for me, one thing I always tell people is you're allowed to evolve. You're allowed to heal. You're allowed to show up as a better person. If anything, that's what it's meant to look like. The person Akka was last year shouldn't be the person Akka is this year. Like, I must meet you and always feel like, oh, you're working on yourself. And I don't mean like start changing your personality and start having split personalities. No, I just mean like you always aim to be a quality human being. And for me, at first, yes, I feel like, people will be judging me because, no, I used to do this and do that. And then now I've become this person. So maybe I'm a hypocrite and maybe it's two-sided. But, you know, the more I've grown in myself and in my confidence in what God is doing in me, I've also started to realize that, oh, my God, like, God is rebuilding me and I'm evolving. And I'm allowed to show up as this new person and embrace her fully. And like you're saying, and I'm allowed to forgive myself and also take accountability and ask for forgiveness from others and show up as this better person. So I think there also has to be a place of, in this context we're in, it's so hard to change. People like this info. Hey, you've changed. Hey, you've changed. Yes, we must change. If we're not changing, what are we doing? You must feel better about who I am as your friend, as your partner, as your workmate. I should always aim to be better. And for me, my goal is always to become a quality human being. Like when people leave my presence, even if it was just a hi, they must feel the love that I carry. They must feel that person that I am. And I just feel like I should show up like that, because what good does it do to me to keep on resolving the fact that when I was 16 years old, I laughed at someone in class? Like, no. Like, let's move on as well. Well, I wasn't that person, though.
No, I like that. I'm so sad that we kind of have to move to something else. But just to add to that, I always, one of my rules and one of my things I hold dear to my heart is not to be around people that want to take me back to the person I was. I'm past that. Like, if you were my friend in high school and we're catching up, it's very fun to catch up and laugh about the past. But it's, but when you keep referencing me to that person, it's like, bruh, I'm out. Mm-hmm. And again, when you have changed,
how you should give them a bit of grace. Kylie, they need to warm up.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why we're laughing about it for a while.
Yeah, like we need, for me, I've just given people grace as well. I will actually also evidently say that, like, oh, and they say those things, right? I also say, like, I put in a point for, oh, hey, you know, I'm no longer that person anymore, and I'm just working to do better. Or sometimes, especially when someone tells me, oh, you know, remember when you did this to me in high school, and maybe it was something really mean, I actually apologize. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry that I made you feel like that. But then the point is, I also just always make it known these days with my interactions with people who try to, like you're saying, take me back. I actively, verbally say, like, I'm no longer that person, and like, I'm trying to be better. And I'll say it a couple of times. But then if I keep saying it and you're not hearing me, then then I feel like it eventually just phases out, because I feel like I'm communicating something to you, but you're not getting it. So I actually get what you're saying. Yeah.
And I think, to be honest, also one of my favorite things to do now is to see high school friends. And you, like, if it's just like for a show, and also we relate. I was home a few days ago. I just got back. And I was meeting like my best friend, obviously, not a high school friend, but hey, that's my guy. But I got to see like one of my other person that was my closest classmate friend in high school. And I had the best laughter. And it was like a nice few days where I was just catching up and talking. But then I also realized that we're different paths in our life and we want different stuff. So it's like, what's the synergy here? Like, if I want to maintain this relationship, how do I go about that? I think that's something I'm navigating, is we're different places. Now, when you have like high school classmates, university classmates, we're different places. What's our mutual ground when we're communicating and building relationships now that we don't have any common ground that was whatever we're doing together? So yeah, it's, friendship is something that is very interesting to navigate, but you have to be very intentional about it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
Let's talk about someone, one of my favorite things, which is education.
Yes, girl. Girl. I'm being excited already.
I think that I do not know how I ended up in the education sector. I don't know why I have a company in the education sector. But my core is always, how do we help young people get better? How do we utilize whatever resources we have as a country, as a continent, to kind of produce the best that we have and let the best stay in the country? Like, why are we always aspiring to kind of leave the country and do that when we could all stick around? But if you see me go, don't be surprised. Anyway, so
a disclaimer after that passionate speech,
because I don't want to say she's a hypocrite, bruh.
Oh, I want Denise, you feel this.
So for somebody that is working in that space, like, just give me a bit of a background to understand where we are at in the education sector in Zambia and Africa in general.
Yeah, so education is also something that I am very passionate about. I think in all the different forms of work I do, the primary thing there is education, just like you. And currently with the education sector in Zambia, you know, the way education has been set up is the primary goal of education is to prepare young people or just learners in general for either the labor force or just to be able to function in their communities and their societies. But then what we see in the education sector is there is this mismatch between what people are learning and what is out there in the world. So most people are leaving school, leaving university, leaving all these things, and they are getting into a world where they are underprepared or unqualified for it, and they are struggling through that. So not to say that what they learn doesn't matter, it does. It's just that for how evolved the global landscape is and how things are moving, there has to be a change or a shift in those things. So I will go on and just add a disclaimer here that the traditional style of teaching in terms of subjects like English, science, and all these other things, the basics and the principles of that still apply even today. But what we see, especially in the African and Zambian context, is that most of what we learn, really, even at Paso Aka, if I asked you to remember some of the concepts in mathematics, you just did it because you knew you had to do it. You didn't know what the principle behind it was, didn't know why you were doing it. And on top of that, you couldn't really relate what you were doing and apply it in real life. So for a lot of us, we move through the education system thinking it's very theoretical and abstract, like it doesn't apply to anything or any of the things we are doing. And that's the major problem in terms of the education system here in Zambia and in Africa. There is a mismatch between what we are learning and what learners are consuming and what the global landscape actually is. And for me, something that I have taken up as a passion or as something that I do is education systems should be able to prepare young people for the future of work and should actually make them leaders and problem solvers in their community. For me, when you go to school, the end goal, at least for in my case, is that if you go back home and you saw a problem in your community, you should be able to apply the learnings you've had in whatever learning experience you had and be able to sort out that problem. And so instead of producing problem solvers, the education system here produces workers who are unfit even for the job market that is currently there. So just as a scope and in summary, it's just this mismatch. Educators, learners, whatever they have is great. It has foundation, but then it's not connected to how the world is changing, to their context. They can't apply what they are learning into a very practical, experiential and experimental way. So because of that mismatch, the education sector keeps producing people and people keep on complaining about unemployment. But the truth is, more than unemployment, it's not that there are no jobs for people. There are jobs, but there are no workers who can work those jobs. So the chart has to flip from, oh, there are no jobs and there's an unemployment crisis. No, the crisis there actually is that the jobs are available, but the young people we have today don't have the skills for those jobs. And so the industry is lacking in skilled works because the education system is not producing skilled workers. So that's a general lowdown of the education sector and what's actually happening.
I agree, right? Because it's evolving at a very fast rate with technology as well. But again, in Zambia, we're not even utilizing technology at 100. I think maybe if we're utilizing it, it's at what, 5%? Mm-hmm. So imagine, even at the rate we are utilizing technology and everything, it's still growing. Like, still complaining, we don't have jobs, we don't have this. This does exist. You're just not ready.
Yes.
Have the qualifications and the experience to actually sit at that table or to actually have that job. So that's the mismatch, actually. I feel like you've really articulated it very well, Kawe. Thank you.
No, because, you know, also just in my experience working on, because running programs and having to work in the, eventually, like having to recruit people for like some of the programs I'd run and stuff like that, you find that a lot of young people come in, right? You look at their curriculum vitae, the skills they have. nowhere near what you need for the job. And people need to understand that these days, it's not just about the technicality of things. People don't employ you, Aka, because you have a degree. People don't just employ you because you have an MBA. People actually employ talent and success. And that's why if you notice in the HR space, there's now a lot of focus on talent. Like they are using the word talent very explicitly. Because what that should already signal to you is that people are looking for a certain type of skilled worker. And a lot of youth, especially Zambian youth, are still stuck in this thing of, oh, because I got a degree, I need to get a job. I'll give you an example of myself. When people meet me, they ask me, what did you study, Kawe? And I did development studies and psychology in my undergrad. In my master's, I'm doing communication for development. I probably will do a second master's and stuff. That academic path is great. But beyond these things, on any given day, I could work different jobs because of my skills in creativity, my skills in problem solving, my skills with technology, my skills in presentation, my skills in leadership, my skills in being able to do public speaking, and all these other soft skills I've garnered. And so these days, the workforce is for people who can, one, articulate themselves well, and two, have enough soft skills, because the landscape needs people who are adaptable, resilient, and who are actually leaders. So you step into an interview session and you are the interviewer, and then these young people come in and you can tell that the only thing they have to their name is their degree. No leadership in sight. Do you volunteer? No. Have you ever tried to do a course online? And the thing about it also is, for young people listening, is that with how things are moving right now, there's so many free things on the internet. Like so many, I always tell people, like, guys, stop watching TikTok all the time. It's a good thing, but there's actually places like you can learn skills, you can show up and do all these other things, because people just don't want you with your degree. People want a skilled worker who can and everything. And remember, jobs are changing. What we are doing today, those aren't the jobs in the next 10 years. They'll probably change a lot. So if you keep saying, oh, my degree, what happens when your industry doesn't exist anymore? Where do you go? So we have to think about all these things, you know, because I feel like African youth don't think about too much and are so hell-bent on, I have a degree. But it's more than your degree. It's about your soft skills. It's about how you show up and what you do. Yeah.
I agree. And I think you speaking has made me text you something, but it's even when people ask me, what are you doing now and what's your degree? I'm always like, well, I never talk about my degree so much because I know I'm in a space where I have to be very adaptable and I have to be easy to learn. Like one of the skills you have to have now is you should easily learn. You should be a fast learner and very adaptable. Changes. Mm-hmm. When something happens quickly, you move from, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening to me, to what skill sets do I need to kind of move with this, what's coming. You have to see the trends coming, and which is also true, because you'd be surprised that we have so much technology on our hands, but we do not know what the trends are in the job market. So when everybody is talking about, I need a job, they're only thinking about the traditional jobs they have.
Yes.
That the workforce or industry can give them. They don't need those people. They don't need more accountants.
No, they don't.
They don't need more. They don't need more.
Not receptionists. No.
They don't.
Like, no.
Everything is changing. Are you changing with it?
Yes.
It's just that fortunate enough that Zambia or Africa is not moving at the fast rate as Europe or China or the US are moving at. But with that being said, when it hits us, it's like COVID. You go in lockdown. So you stop being proactive, you become reactive. But you knew it was coming. So it's like one of those things where even I sit in interviews or I do recruitment now and I'm like, okay, I really don't care about your degree like that, but then we'll put it there. Are you a fast learner? Are you? Can you use technology efficiently, or do you know how to use technology? Those are type of questions I ask, and also, so that's like at the receiving end, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm getting a degree, I'm at the receiving end, but there's also people that actually create this curriculum, people that approve their curriculum, policies that trickle down and influence the curriculum. What can you speak to that?
I think for me, I'll start by saying, because I've worked in the education space here in Zambia for quite a while, and it's just to point out, it's not as easy as it looks to just pivot and change certain policies or these other things. So I'll tell you, even before a curriculum is actually produced or announced by the ministry or any government body, it takes quite a while, and there's a lot of players involved, because you're imagining that you are doing this curriculum for so many millions of children. So it's never as easy as it looks. But what I will say to that as well is that, and that's why for me, I'm in the non-formal learning space. So, you know, you have formal education where you have the school structure, there's a school system. Then we have non-formal education, which is where my specialty is now, is where you sort of think of it as it still has structure, it still has system, but it's supplementary to the formal education. So aside from what government is doing, I think even just as supplementary players, even school bodies themselves, because you know schools also have the autonomy to create or curate learning experiences beyond what the government gives them. And yeah, something that I've been very passionate about for me is also training educators to see these opportunities so that they can go ahead and, you know, train their learners. So what I will say is that there also needs to be other players stepping in, because even as a non-formal education, different nonprofits, different social enterprises, the thing also about them is that they are not so different from what the government is offering, you know? So if all of us could also start working on, oh, how do we then create an education system where people are ready to learn? And it's not just, because another thing about people who compliment the government, most people do it for publicity, and then they just want to tick boxes and it's not towards impact. But imagine a situation where the extracurricular support that is given to most schools is so strong that it supplements what's being given by government, you know? So I think for me, I would say, one, the government is doing what it can, and processes and systems are slow because it's a whole thing. But I think outside players, which are so many, also need to start doing research, need to start actively thinking about, oh, how can we then come in? Because we have a lot of people who go into schools and do all these programs. One thing I would say is like the Duke of Edinburgh, right? They've started entering with these non-formal education skills, and they are teaching students life skills, employability skills. And if we could have more players like that in the country attached to schools and providing all these things, I think it will help supplement. Because at the end of the day, you still need to learn math and chemistry and learn the principles. But then there is more. And also, I think schools can also do their part in exposing people, I mean, young people to these things. Each school now, I think by statute, and I don't want to be misquoted, should have a guidance and counseling teacher. What are they guiding and counseling their kids as well? We need to think about that. Aside from emotional support, which they do so amazingly, and career guidance, the career guidance also now has to evolve to what you're saying, Aka, about the world is changing. How are you thinking about the jobs that you want? How are you thinking about where you're going? This day's career day is now a money-making venture. So now can you turn that career day into a serious thing? No, because, you know, like, it's not become a money-making venture. If I told you how many times my aunties and my sisters have paid for to make a nice uniform for the tailor, it's a lot of money. So my point is that even schools themselves, for the innovations they have in terms of career days and all these other things and all these other players, I think if we came together and actually talked about the real things, actually supplemented real skills, skills that are technological, skills that are ethical, skills that will actually build our kids for the future, I feel like even the pressure on the government would even reduce. But that's a whole thing on its own, because education is a system. But I truly believe that if we collaborated as non-formal learning players, we could actually transform this education landscape. And if schools also could just go beyond making people wearing police uniforms for career day and actually talk about the serious careers, our money, that money would be worth it. No shade to anyone.
No shade taken. And I think my company also focuses on the non-formal learning, where it's also complementing what government is doing. Exactly. But I've touched on something that's very solid and something that we got into this year, which is research and data, right? Mm-hmm. I know that so much money is put in the education sector. I don't know the figures, but a lot of money is put into the education sector, which is why education is a core to everything we do. But we can't track where that money is or what type of impact it is or where the stretch is in knowledge. Mm-hmm. So you find that the same organizations or people that are in the non-formal sector are doing the same thing at the same level. So there's that gap where we don't know if, for example, Genius is doing this. If my company comes and I work with the same people, am I starting from base one or am I going to complement what Genius was doing? Mm-hmm. Where is the data, right? Yeah. If Genius had an impact on 50,000 people, where are those 50,000 people? What's the story? What can we say about mapping? That? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the mapping? Like, and it's the one thing that touches me the most. I say this to many people. There's no data. And just even moving from the informal learning to like formal education, we have so many people graduating. We do not know what they're graduating from. We don't have the right figures. So an overall year in 2025, how many nurses graduated for all the universities, right? How many teachers graduated? Like, what's the mapping? Is it relevant? Do we need more nurses to graduate or do we need to kind of reduce the numbers? How many nurses are in the field? Okay, how do we collect this data? What are these people doing? So there's no mapping, there's no data. We're not actively investing so much in research in Zambia and Africa at large. So there's that gap already. So even for me, I know that, okay, great. A great business opportunity for my organization, but a very big gap, like you said, and only can be...
It's a really, really, really huge gap. It's a really huge gap. And I think when it comes to research and development, it's also supposed to be something that, you know, because you know how we look at it, especially in Zambia, is like, oh, if it's in the government, right? Research and development is just like one thing. But every arm of government, every place, every is supposed to have a research and development, you know what I mean? Like thing happening with them. So that whatever impact and things are collected is done in this place. And we're supposed to have a database where you could easily, like you're saying, find these things. So a lot of the countries and the nations which have evolved, when I was doing my undergrad and I did a course on science and technology and innovation and the trends, and one of the things I remember, we were doing this case study on Korea, North Korea, I think, and it talked about how they went from being one of the poorest countries in the world, right? If you look at North Korea now, I don't know if it's North or South, but they are so up the ladder in terms of technological advancement, education, all that stuff, just because they invested in research and development and people. So because now they were actively investing in like what's happening, how do we change? Because you know, research helps you change things in real time. With Genius, while I was at Genius, one of the things we really invested in was research. For each of the programs we had, would collect feedback and would pivot based on what we've collected in terms of the learning experience, and would publish these things in our reports and all that stuff. But like you're saying, you find that it would also make more sense if we had one research bank where different institutions can put that data. Where has ACCA gone? Where has Genius gone? Where has Duke of Edinburgh gone? Are we all going to the same areas and over, you know, like doing the same programs in the same areas? Or can we divide and conquer? So because we are all working independently and there's no solid research and development framework guiding us, with the education sector, it's always fragmented, you know? People don't really know what's happening. And just generally with different industry, people don't know what's happening. I remember one of the questions we had was, industry players are complaining about unskilled workers. Can we have a report talking about maybe 6 banks? What were the trends in the bank? What do they mean in terms of people are not skilled? If all this information is out there, I feel like it would change a lot. Like, you know how World Economic Forum is always producing like reports like, oh, by 2026, this should happen. By 2030, we'll be this many. It helps people move in a certain way. But then for us, right, imagine World Economic Forum telling you that Africa will be the biggest, most populated continent in the world. Africans themselves don't even know that.
Yeah.
Like Africans don't even know that they are actually the future of work. Like, the workforce will be in Africa. Most people are shocked by that information unless you're a player in these spaces. So it's what you're saying. Like, for us with research, and we are not so big. Like, so we don't know what's happening. We are always shocked. Constantly shocked, constantly. I always say, like, if there's a place in this country, constantly shocked, constantly perplexed, constantly just, oh my God.
Only at the receiving end of everything.
Like, oh my you God. Even when coming. AI came, like, when AI, I was like, guys, like, AI, you know, like, okay, yes, I get, but like, the shock. And you know, wherever there's misinformation, there's abuse as well. And that's why with AI now, you're seeing people, instead of using it for sensible things, people start making videos of pointing planes. And now you're saying, oh no, this lion is in Africa. It's the 666. Like, you know, it's all these weird things because there's just no proper information. So people can't use things rightly, because if you knew what the future holds and what the trends have been, you would know how to, you know, regulate things. Like, you know what you do. Because I was telling someone, just to close, research showed that, you remember that time when there was, okay, you don't remember, we're both not really, like, born, but when there was privatization, the data showed that time that a lot of men died from depression during privatization. That was because the job market shifted, right? There are trends there. Things happened, right? Then now, you see a situation where, like, it's changing again. So from if that time there was a lot of suicide among providers and men because they ran out of jobs, not to be a prophet of doom, what do you think can happen now? Yes, like, you know what I mean? So for me, it's those things, like, because people get shocked. But the thing about history is that it repeats itself. It's never a shock. The world has been around for billions of years, guys. These things that are happening are never really, like, new. There's nothing new on earth. But then in Africa, our mind, we're always dizzy. Constantly shocked, constantly confused.
The victims.
I'm like, maybe if you knew, we would stop being the victims. That would be better.
We're always at the receiving end, which is true. And I think with this little data my company gets, we really do know the trends and everything. But I'm heavy on... We need the shift where also we need to take responsibility where we're not always thinking it's the government. Because now, again, the government is not investing, because I always like to bring it back. You can't tell me to buy a car when I can't afford to buy rent.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't afford to pay rent. Like, the government will always focus on the basic needs, which are roads, hospitals, schools, like the basic needs to run the country and to get us in. If we can get those things in, infrastructure for research and development will actually be prioritized. Like, research and development, climate change, these other things. But as long as we don't get our basic needs intact, you can't ask your parents to buy you a car, but they don't have a house or can't afford to pay rent. It doesn't work like that. And the government is our parent. So what does that mean for private players? Like, that's an opportunity for a business. It's an opportunity for collaborations.
Yeah.
So it's such... We could go on and on.
On this one, we could sleep here.
It's such a very... It's a deep conversation. And again, it's an opportunity as it is a challenge. One thing I know about you is you worked at JCI. I just want to know, what was your biggest lesson working there?
Well, I didn't really work, but yeah, if you look at how JCI is, it's
actually... Yeah, you're a young leader.
Yes. So JCI, which is the Junior Chamber International, right? It's a global movement, a network of young leaders in over 120 countries across the world. And I was a young leader in JCI, I think, for about 5 years, eventually becoming the youngest female national president here in Zambia. And ish, girl, I learned a lot. You know, one, I got a lot of exposure because I was working in the African and Middle East region, but we got to collaborate and meet with other people from, like, Europe, the Americas, and all these other places. The first thing was exposure. I think being exposed to how other people see leadership and how leadership is actually taken so seriously in other places was such a not a culture shock, was such a taking for me, because leadership is such an anchoring thing. And seeing young people be that passionate, be responsible, be active citizens, for me was a big thing. The second thing I learned from JCI actually was leadership is not easy. People like it. Like, people want to be leaders. When you're a leader, it's not that cute. Like, it's not you. Like, it's you. You are the person people go to. And so I had to learn certain skills like delegation. I had to learn adaptability. I had to learn resilience. I also had to pull my weight. Like, you know, because when you become a leader, you're sort of like the go-to for everything. And working in a global network like that, the demands were high, Aka, sometimes. Like, I'm just a fresh graduate. They're asking me to do a grant projection with, like, members of the national organization. I'm like, I'm just a child, please. How am I supposed to do these projections, you know? But I think it goes back to what you said earlier about your ability to learn. I had to learn to learn. Like, I had to love learning, because I was blank most of the time, but that didn't stop me. I had to learn. And from that experience, I learned a lot. Like, I learned skills. I read a lot. And for things I didn't know, I researched. I researched. I asked questions. I learned skills. Like, I had to learn things. I think it's because of JCI that I learned how to do Excel sheets with, like, formulas, because I had to project financial numbers. And it just taught me so much. But at the most important lesson for me was, you know, I know that volunteering these days is not like the most happening thing. But I learned also that in spaces like JCI, where you don't get paid in money, you get paid in exposure and experience. And it really worked out. Like, volunteering there was so fulfilling, because what you would gain in return in terms of the people you'd meet, the courses you'd take up, and all these things you had access to, was so, like, for me, even up to today, are things that have shaped me and how I look at the world. And so, yeah, I think that's most of the lessons in JCI. It was like a stretch. That was like a stretching for me, because I was so young. And I had to report to, like, senators and advisors. And I was just like, I think I was 24, 25. Or I think I said when I was 22. So it was different. Like, you have senators asking you questions and you're like, hey, I'm just a child. But it taught me a lot about leadership.
What advice would you give a young person now in terms of what skill sets they need to kind of keep up with the evolving world?
That's a really good one. In terms of skill sets, I'll start by saying that the skills of the future, and the future, by the way, is now, because one of the biggest controversial, I don't know if I can say myths, maybe I can say myths, I haven't yet seen it happen, is that robots and AI will take our jobs. Like, Kali, we've watched a lot of Terminator and Avengers. So now, everyone's scared that we'll create these, like, robots or artificial intelligence to take our jobs. And so with that in mind, with how fast the technological landscape is evolving and shifting, the skills that will actually work are soft skills. So human skills, things that you can actually do as a human being. So things like emotional intelligence, things like empathy, resilience, adaptability, leadership, communication, collaboration, and teamwork. Research as well is a skill. Which other skill could I think of? I think I've said creativity. Creativity is going to be such a big skill. The ability to actually create stuff. And then also just your ability to learn. You have to be a fast learner in this new global landscape. So those are, I think, the 10 skills I'll speak to. And just know that the more you grow in these skills, they are transferable across industries. So creativity is not just fixed to the education sector. It can move in engineering, in science. And just know that all these skills then make you a probable candidate. Because then if you're able to adapt, you're able to research, you're able to collaborate, you're able to learn, you can be anything and you can work anywhere. You have to be malleable. You have to be able to bend and move and shift within the workforce. And those are the skills that will keep you on top of things, will keep you always. And also you have to be strategic. You have to be a problem solver. Be strategic in the sense that what are the trends? What's coming? How do I position myself to what's coming? So even today, think about what does the future look like in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years? Am I positioning myself properly? And ask yourself if what you're doing today will be relevant in the next 20 years.
No, I like those. I like those. And with adding all those, just learn more about AI. I don't mean ChatGPT, but... like AI, just a deep ChatGPT, understanding on AI, technology. Please. Yeah, people think AI ChatGPT. Just like an understanding of technology, how it's evolving, how certain apps we're using are integrating technology, what that means for you. Just understanding and seeing which ones are relevant in your field,
yes,
which ones you want to be proficient in, and which one do you just use daily for your life.
We're not tech bros anymore. We are all tech bros.
Yeah, like, we're all tech bros.
We all have to be tech bros now because everything requires technology. Obviously, they're the experts, but now everything works with technology, and I agree with you.
Yeah, so just that, but I really do like them. And again, the big one is being creative and easy to learn. Like, you have to be a fast learner. So if you're not creative and you're not fast at learning, it's going to be hard for you because, yeah, it's shifting. So... that's interesting. Anyway, Kawe, I want to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Oh, guys, for context, Aka gave me a list of all the things I shouldn't ask her.
Oh, but no, anyway, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Jokes. What question do I have to ask you? Let's see. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
That's so short.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. Like, it's about to really flip. Like, my life it might flip in any direction, to be honest. Like, I can't concretely say I see myself doing ABCD. I do see myself owning a business and being very successful. That's... like professional wise, but in other aspects of my life, I could be in Zambia, I could not be in Zambia. I might be married, I might not be married. Like, you get it. Like, it's such an easy question, but very complex as well, because there's no one answer to this. Like, I'm at a point in my life where it could go any direction. I'm guaranteed I'll stew on Tonse. It's going to be successful. Good things are coming. Everything else is just going to really interchange, and I don't know, to be honest. It's like the business guaranteed. Everything else, I'm not really sure.
And I asked you that purposely because I've asked you this actually a couple of times, and you've always answered like this, and that's what I also love about you. Like, you're just ready for the future. And I think it's also a lesson because sometimes we get caught up in, oh, my 5-year plan, my 10-year plan, my 20-year plan. It's good to have vision. It's good to have direction. But I also think there's a beauty in just not knowing where the journey will take you. And recently, I've been telling myself, like, oh, the person I am today, if I asked myself last year on this day, like, did I think this is the life I would live? No, completely not. And that's changed. And now I also answer like you. So I'm like, I don't know. Certain things are guaranteed, yes. But it's also where God takes me. And that's what I really love about you and your essence. So that's why I asked the question as well.
And one thing to add on to that is that if you asked me 5 years ago, yes, 5 years ago, predicted I'm here. Yes. This is where I planned to be 5 years ago. Like, I own a business. I'm doing the stuff. I'm working with organizations. I'm running projects. Yes.
Yeah.
It's just that certain things I believed in 5 years ago and the certain things maybe I thought would happen in a certain way are changing. Like, it's changing every day where you're like, do I really need to do that or do I really need to rethink that?
Yeah.
So
it's the a vision who, remains, but the like,
so changed, the channels might change,
but the vision,
but remains. The core, yeah, the core is still that. So I still want to own a business. I still want to be a billionaire. I still want to do this and that. But there are certain aspects, I think people now start asking you in your mid-20s where you're like, bruh, me, I don't know.
it's the thing. The vision remains, but how the assignments and, you know, looks like can change. For me, that's what I'm learning.
Yeah.
Of course, the vision remains, but how that, you know, assignment can be expressed in that season of your life can be very different, and you have to be welcoming of it.
And also the path can change.
Yes.
Like, it's the same vision, but the path to getting there is different. So that's a really good question. Like, people ask me, like, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Like, that's easy. 5 years? That's close.
Well, yeah, I'll be a mother.
Oh,
ready to spend your money.
Please, I want to work hard for your kids.
Yes, give that's what I'm sure I'll be a mommy.
Give me kids. People don't understand. Like, like, you know how that makes me smile? Like,
I know. That's why I wanted us to end with it, because I know you're not happy.
Well, Kabwe, my last question is, what do you look forward to?
In life, in general?
In general.
Ish, you know, I look forward to living life. Like, I just have this conviction that I'll just live the life of my dreams because I'm co-creating with God. So, like, I really look forward to living. Like, to really living and really fulfilling my assignments with God, whatever that looks like, because I just have, like, a good God who's very stable. Like, so stable, so anchoring, so loving. And I'm just excited about co-creating this life with God. Like, that actually excites me. So, yeah, just living life. Like, it won't be perfect. I know things come and go, but just the fact that I get a chance to co-create my life with God and live the life of my dreams is just, it blows my mind every day. Like, it actually blows my mind every day. Yeah.
When you say it blows my mind, reminds me of that song by Hillsong United. That's Blow My Mind or something, but in that answer. And also, it just kind of, on a high note, we're ending on this note, and I'm very grateful that I got to have you here. Like, we really did start at a high and ending at a high. Energy matched. Any day.
Always.
We're truly friends.
No, we are.
And for everybody listening, honestly, I hope you really enjoyed our conversations. It's just one of those things where it goes in any direction and you get to have so many things to talk about and share. But in the essence, I think for me, my takeaway is just the importance of knowing yourself and keeping up with the trends that are happening in the education sector, because that truly is affecting you and the way life is going on for you. So, yeah, I really hope you enjoyed this episode with my friend Kabwe. Like, we enjoyed hosting each other.
Yes.
So, with that being said, Kabwe, do you have any closing remarks?
I'm just proud of you. Like,
oh,
I'm
thank so you.
Proud of you. I can't wait to see this, like, podcast grow. I can't wait for God to repay you for your consistency. And I can't wait for what God is doing in your life, Aka.
You're going to make me cry.
No, like, really, I can't wait to see, because you've been one of the most consistent people I have met. And when you start something, you just do it, and you do it wholeheartedly, and God honors that. And I just pray that God will continue to, like, reveal himself to you, and that you'll keep on going on the path he wants you to go on. Like, for me, that's what I just always hope for you. But I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of how authentic you are. I'm so proud of the opportunities you give so many people and how you show up. And yeah, I'm so happy for you, and I can't wait for this podcast to grow and become everything you didn't even think you could be. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for my flowers, Kabwe. I do appreciate and love you. With that being said, bye, everybody.